Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have been dissecting Galatians for some time now, and have been doing so with our good friend Kirk. And I didn't mean to besmirch artist Kirk in my last statement. I don't know if you overheard me.
Well, I actually was walking upstairs, so I missed it. Did I miss something good?
Yeah. Well, no. The young humanitarian aid worker that was kidnapped by the Islamic State and then repeatedly tortured and raped by Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the most famous Muslim now in the world. She went to Syria, as she had gone to the Palestinian areas of Israel, to draw pictures and play with children. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being that misguided?
Well, I think your point about that you made that I did hear before I came upstairs was that if you're going over there to, work with these people, you got to be aware that they don't want any part of you.
No.
So I don't see the value in doing it.
They have no respect for life. They think that rape and kidnap and enslavement and pedophilia are good. They think terrorism is good. Why would you go over there to draw pictures and play with children amongst a society where everything that that a moral person would hold to be evil, they embrace as godly?
Yeah, it's, you're a sitting duck.
Right.
Yes, but I mean, what are you going to do? You can carry an army around with you, protect you, live in a compound?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not involved.
You know, if I want to go fight a forest fire, the last thing I'm going to do is douse myself with gasoline in preparation.
Okay.
You know, it's brain dead that someone would do such a thing. But it's brain dead that America would know about the fact that the Abu Baghdadi raped her and not report it, as if the country doesn't have the right to know. Who are they protecting?
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's sick. Well, speaking of sick, after Paul has explained that made four egregious errors in Galatians 2:9, you know, he has said that it wasn't they recognized Yahweh on him. He didn't say they recognized Yosha's influence on him. He didn't say that he recognized the Torah's influence on him. That no, they recognized grace, the gratia, the charities, the cute little Greek and Roman goddesses of lasciviousness on him.
Mm-hmm.
Mistake number one. That they were supposed pillars, and he names them as the supposed pillars as John, James, and Peter, the most three important disciples, whom he has besmirched earlier in saying their testimony was worthless. All that means, as a Christian, you have to discard everything but Paul's letters and the book of Hebrews. All the rest of what you carry around, lug around as a Bible, you have to throw away. Because it's worthless. And then he made the mistake of saying that he was given authority to the whole world when they were only had the message of circumcision. And he said that his message was the message of uncircumcision, which puts him at complete odds with God. You know, if you're uncircumcised, if that's what you're identifying with, if that's what you're promoting, you're in wholesale opposition to God. Inadequate, deadly, deceitful, destructive.
If you're wrong about everything else, as Terry said, like in our conversation yesterday, the simple fact that he is endorsing or not endorsing circumcision puts him at odds with God, therefore it's a slam dunk case.
It is. Open and closed. Just Galatians 2:9 and 2:8 alone are enough to bury the myth that Paul was speaking for God. He was not only not speaking for God, and lying about being inspired by God, his message was the antithesis of God. He was an open hostility to God. And, you know, it's just amazing that the world's largest religion grew out of the letters of a man who claimed to speak for the God that he was openly hostile to. You just got to be a dunderhead.
Yeah. Well, a little later, if we have time, I made a list. And it's kind of... you know, as you were talking about Muhammad, I made the list, and then and you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, and let's deal with that just in a moment here, because the next thing that follows is after he has then said that he was given the right hand by the three most important people in the world at that time, Yahu Khan and John,
right.
Jacob James, and Shimon Kefesh, Peter, that they gave him the right hand of authority. They steps aside and authorized him as the man in charge. And they agreed to limit themselves only to circumcision.
Yeah.
Which is not only accurate historically, and there's a word for misstating evidence. That's called lying.
Lying.
Yeah. Not only did he lie about their limitations and his authorization and their empowering him, it's grotesquely inappropriate to demean these three men to limit their testimony when Yahusha said exactly the opposite. All right, then he follows this. This is an amazing statement, Kirk. He says, only, just alone by itself, the lowly and poor that we might remember, which also I was eager and quick, same this to do. Okay, beyond the fact that it was written more poorly than a 60-year-old and beginning their first year of school. What he says here is that the only thing that was important, the only thing they didn't criticize my lack of Torahlessness. They didn't criticize my the fact that my message never once cited Yahusha. They didn't criticize the fact that I made a claim that Yahusha said that if anyone makes that same claim, don't believe them. They didn't say that, you know, when one would come in his own name, that you'll believe him and not Yahusha. They didn't, according to Paul, they never once challenged him when according to Acts, Shimon Kefesh, Peter just got up and said, what you said is untrue. And here's proof. But he says, no, no, no. The only thing that they were concerned about wasn't Yahusha's message, wasn't the invitations to meet with God, particularly Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, or Shavuah. It wasn't the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone. It wasn't the covenant. It wasn't the terms and conditions of the covenant. It wasn't Yahweh's name. It wasn't the prophets and the proof that Yahweh exists. No, it wasn't any of that. The only thing that was important was remembering the lowly and the poor.
I have a question. In the context of where they were in the time that they were in, two-thirds of the world is enslaved in the Roman world.
Yeah.
Most everybody, it is most definitely a nobleman serf situation. What poor are you talking about that they're supposed to be helping so much? I mean, I'm not saying this charity is a bad thing. I shouldn't pour word.
Let's just go through this process here. You've got Paul in Romans writing that God put the Roman government and empowered it for their good and they should submit to it. Who was the largest enslaver in the world at that time?
The Roman government, of course.
So how could you endorse the Roman government and say to be concerned about the fate of the lowly and poor?
Yeah.
And by the way, where does Yahweh say, hey, the only thing that you should care about is the lowly and poor?
He doesn't. He cares about his family.
Right.
He's very adamant about it. He says, if you're part of my family, I don't care about you. If you walk away from my Torah, I walk away from your children.
As a matter of fact, from God's perspective, who are the lowly and poor?
The lowly and poor are the ones that have walked away from him.
That is correct. And is Yahweh showing any concern of those who have walked away from him, who disregard him? No.
You have that choice. I gave you the freedom to make the choice, so you've made it. And so don't bother me anymore.
Don't bother me anymore. Don't expect anything from me. I'm going to disregard you just because you disregarded me. You know, Yahweh was saying, you know, your children, I'm going to disregard because you chose to be adverse to my Torah. You've forgotten my Torah. I'm going to forget your children. The lowly and poor are those who have discarded, have disdained, have forsaken Yahweh's Torah instructions regarding his covenant. They are the lowly and poor.
Well, they have to be. The Greek word is tochon, or a tokon, or with mm-hmm. a P in the front. I assume that's silent.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition there is to cower, to crouch, hence to be a beggar, mm-hmm. beggarly, poor,
worthless,
destitute, and spiritually poor.
Right.
They're not describing anybody in the family.
No, because if you're a part of the family, rather than being worthless and of having little value and being impoverished, if you are someone with that is affiliated with the covenant, what's the first thing you get as a benefit of the covenant?
Power and enrichment.
Well, that's power the fourth and the fifth. But well, and that's and by the way that no and that happens to be the direct answer. So if you're empowered and enriched by the covenant on Shavuot, then you're the antithesis of lowly and poor, right?
Yes,
you're
the, you might be short of funds, right, but that's the temporary situation.
The first benefit is you become immortal.
Right.
Now, I would think that's neither loyal. That's not worthless, is it?
No.
If you're immortal, you're not destitute. Okay, what's the second thing? You're perfected.
We're perfected, yes.
So if you're perfect, are you worthless?
Yeah,
or have you a little value once you're perfect? And then the third is you're adopted into Yahweh's home,
family.
In his family, yeah. And you inherit everything he has to give.
Doesn't that make you in the royal family?
You know, last time I checked, the entire universe was his.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how many there are going to be ultimately that we're going to spend eternity with in the covenant, but when you take the entire universe, if you divide it by tens of thousands,
mm-hmm.
even if you were to divide it by millions, there are billions upon billions upon billions of galaxies and solar systems.
Well, even if you didn't build a new one, this one is expanding.
Right. So, and the fourth and fifth benefits of the covenant are to be enriched and empowered. There is no one that Yahweh cares about who is lowly and poor. No one.
No. No.
Not a soul. If you're lowly and poor, from God's perspective, you're estranged from the covenant. He doesn't know you. Doesn't care about you. Doesn't know you. If you want to be enriched, and ultimately enriched, empowered, perfected, immortal, adopted, enriched in every possible way, except the terms and conditions of the covenant, because those are the benefits. So this very thing that he claims they said is ridiculous. It's the last thing they would say. It's untrue. So when we read that only the lowly and poor that we might remember, also I was eager and quick to do this. When you look at Yahweh's testimony, how much time does he devote to the covenant, to being walking away from religion, to being opposed to political schemes, to walking down the path that he has provided, to attending his seven meetings each year, and to proving who he is and that he wants us to come to know him and engage in a relationship with him. When you compare it to that teaching, how many words does Yahweh say devote to, well, just take care of the lowly and poor?
Less than a half of a point of a 1% or something.
Yeah. Yes. So if you're going to summarize,
he had a scheme to take care of them.
Right. If you were to summarize Yahusha's testimony, would you summarize Yahusha's testimony as only take care of the lowly and poor?
Hardly.
But by the way, when countries today try to play caretaker, and they have all these safety nets like America does, like Europe does, where you know, you have a Head Start program, and then you have a No Child Left Behind program, and then you have welfare based upon the number of kids that you have, and then you have food stamps, and then you have housing allowances, and all these programs to take care of the lowly and poor. How well is that working?
As bankrupting everyone, and
right,
nothing.
Including the character of those who receive it. You know, taking care of those who don't want to engage in the prospect of caring for themselves is bankrupts everybody.
Yeah, well, the reservations, Indian reservations, and the school system are the two biggest things you can point to. The government is totally running.
Right.
And they're the most corrupt, most disgusting,
yeah,
poorest product produced. I mean, and
look at our military, though. That's a government institution.
Well, there's another military now. Yeah.
Yeah. All we do is we break things and kill people and claim that how wonderful it is. Well, we're bankrupting the country. Or look at Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
They're government run. You know, there is a 0% chance that this was said, and there is a 0% chance that this is right.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, he's writing a letter to his people and Gladio, and he doesn't care what. And he's a liar, admitted liar,
right.
And we find
right.
it. So it doesn't really matter what he says there because it doesn't have to report honestly the story.
Right. And he's been brought in because his testimony is in conflict with Yosha's, Yahweh's, and the Torah.
Right.
Overtly in conflict. That's why he was brought in. He confirms that it's in conflict with his writings and with his testimony here. And yet he says the only thing that these three most important people in the world at that moment, those authorized by Yosha, who spent 3 years with him, the only thing they talked about, the only thing that was important wasn't his errant testimony. It wasn't his opposition to the Torah. It wasn't him claiming to have seen Yosha and never to have cited him, not learned a thing from him, and being contradictory to him. No, just taking care of the poor. Oh, we're going to have a welfare state. That's the only thing that's important to God.
Yeah. Well, that's the mega church approach, too, now, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're always going to Africa to save the Africans. The Africans certainly right. haven't been treated, you know.
Yeah, here's the mission. Yeah, we're going to go off and, as opposed to, why don't we first deal with the single greatest poverty in the world is our impoverished understanding of who God is and what he's offering in his Torah. That's the greatest poverty that exists today. And if you wanted to resolve that poverty so that people could become valuable, then they're going to say, well, the only thing you need to do is to begin to teach the Torah. What you need to do is to show Yosha's affinity for the Torah and that he was Torah observant. That's what you need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But no, take care of the poor. So we're going to what? We're going to have a wealth redistribution program? Where does Yahweh have a wealth redistribution program?
He doesn't.
He doesn't.
No, he takes care of his own.
Yeah. And, I mean, is it appropriate to help people out who need help? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But how does Yahweh go about it?
Well, he also makes them participate if they can. When they
right.
can, you don't. I mean,
right. You know, he's going to provide wood. You've got to build the fire and build the home. He's going to provide wool. You've got to weave the fabric and knit the clothes. He's going to provide a portion of the field, but you've got to go harvest the food and then prepare it.
Right. He wants you to participate. The whole all
right.
relationships are.
Right. If you don't engage, if you don't make a contribution to your own well-being and to your family's well-being, then what in the hell are you going to be like as in eternity? If you're not willing to engage, to show that you've got a backbone, to show that you've got some purpose, you've got some drive, you've got some character, what in the hell would we want you to spend eternity with us? If you see an impoverished person, and you give them a can of tuna fish. How long is that going to be a benefit to them?
Short period.
If you see an impoverished person and you direct them to Yahweh's Torah and the terms and conditions to participate in the covenant,
mm-hmm.
how long is that going to benefit them?
Potentially eternity.
Yeah.
If they respond.
Did Paul ever once affirm the merits of the Torah as the means to resolve poverty and worthlessness?
It's hard to do that. He never quoted.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, Mark? At least quoted accurately.
Accurately.
Yeah, you said that you made a comparison between Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of its New Testament, and Muhammad. Who claimed that he was also authoring a New Testament, the last testament, if you will. Muhammad's claims are almost identical to Joseph Smith's claims in terms of something that would confirm the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, and the, according to Muhammad, the Injil, which was a corruption of the Greek term. So what do you have as a comparison between these fellas?
I start out with a list about Muhammad, and then you'll see is quite now you and I don't always agree exactly on these things, but I'm gonna toss it out at you anyway.
Okay.
Let's start as the founder of this major religion. Well, we'll start with Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lone messenger. Never quotes the Torah. He's got the wrong name for God. Hates the chosen people, wants them dead. The Jews cause him all the problems. That's what they teach. Now, this is both Muhammad and Islam. They endorse war and terrorism. Kidnapping and the slave trade. Rape's fine. Torture. Murder. Pedophilia. Besides lying and some of those, throw in some more immoral lifestyle. Now, let's put Paul at the top of the thing. Let's scratch out Muhammad. Put Paul. He's a lone messenger. Never quotes the Torah.
Accurately, never once.
Wrong name for God. Hates the chosen people. Wants them dead.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't apply directly to
Paul, he says he wants them castrated. He wants them castrated.
That wipes out the whole genocide.
Right. Yeah.
The Jews, obviously, and the Torah caused him all these problems.
And he himself claimed to be a ruthless terrorist.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that he was sexually perverted.
Well, let's go right down the list here.
Okay.
We've got war and terrorism. He certainly supports the Roman position on that. All the church has gone with that to this day.
Yes. Yeah, he was wholly and completely supportive of the Roman government's position, which was a blend of Roman politics and religion, wholly supportive of that, and they were the terrorists of their day.
The church, at least, has no problem with kidnapping and the slave trade, and you say, well, Kirk, that's not so. Well, there's a place called the Mexican border, and there's tens of thousands of little girls that are sold off into sex slavery to the United States. If you want to shut the border down, hell with the drugs. Do it for this.
Do it for that.
Reason.
Yeah.
And nobody ever speaks to that.
Nope.
They obviously endorse rape.
Yeah. And look at the Roman Catholic Church as it relates to rape.
And pedophilia.
We
as a people, supposedly a Christian nation, have no problem with torture.
No. We do it all the way from the President of the United States on down, authorizing it, condoning it.
And murder. We have a military machine that does it.
Yeah, we do.
It is so sick now that we talk about all these Marines and things that are so heroic and they can run in and save people, but we don't send them in to put them at risk anymore. We send a drone in and we just blow up the situation. Isn't that how the girl died? I don't know that story that well.
What the U.S. announced today is that the American military is going to fly more drones. Is going to engage more drones around the world. That's its solution. Now, let's talk about some other similarities.
Sure.
Didn't Muhammad claim that his first meeting with the spirit that he would later associate with his God beat him and almost to the point of death, so that he took days to recover? And didn't Paul say that he was beaten to the point where he was blinded and weakened, that it took days to recover? Their spirit, rather than the spirit of Yahweh, who gives sight to the blind, who gives an upright ambulatory nature to those who are lame, who cures the sick, their God, their dark spirit, did exactly the opposite to them.
And continues to do it throughout their life.
Yeah, it continues, throughout their life to torment them. And both of them testified that their first introduction to their spirit was demonic. So exactly the same. Didn't both claim to be demon-possessed?
Yes.
Yeah, Paul put in writing, so did Muhammad.
Both.
Well,
How do you deal with that?
How do you deal with that? Did both claim that they were taken to the seventh heaven?
Mm-hmm.
did both claim that they couldn't officially tell you if it was bodily or in their mind, and but then reported on the seventh heaven, and this great miracle of being taken there dominates both of their testimony?
Mm-hmm.
Both did exactly the same thing, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Did both tell men that they could lord over women?
Absolutely. Women are lesser beings.
Wow.
To whatever degree you like.
Wow. And both men claimed that they were God's lone authorized and final spokesperson to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Boy, there is a lot of similarity, isn't there? Both were responsible with the authorship of their New Testament.
Yeah, people like to think good, better, best. You know, we're not as bad as them, therefore we're okay. No, you're
not. Yeah. No, you're not. Yeah, and both of them claimed that their testimony, their letters, their rantings, if you will, confirmed that which was written before in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and was inspired by the same God as the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and yet both men's testimony was an overt opposition to and demeaned the testimony of the author of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
So both men were insane.
Yeah.
In fact, both men claimed to have been insane. Well, so there, as you say, you know, there are a lot of people I've met along life's way when I wrote Prophet of Doom and Tea with Terrorists that were adverse to Islam and said, yeah, that's a horrible, disgusting religion, and you know, Allah is modeled after Satan. But they can't see the log in their own eye.
No. Yahweh could, and Yahweh did.
Yes.
He spoke of it constantly.
Yep. And it's amazing that this man of contradictions is considered an apostle, the Apostle Paul, and that he is the author of half the Christian New Testament, and he's revered by Christians and is seen as godly, even by people who are, you know, in other ways thoughtful. It is peculiar in the extreme.
It can suck in the best, nicest people.
Yeah, in fact, didn't Yosha say that? That this wolf in sheep's clothing, that this bad tree with rotten fruit would who was Torahless would affect even the chosen.
Mm-hmm. It all comes from if you never quote the Torah, if you never study the Torah, mm-hmm. you don't even know God's name, which would be found in the Torah if you got a good translation of it.
Yeah.
You cannot be. You cannot have a strange perspective. You'll have the correct perspective. You just couldn't be suckered in by this.
No, the antidote for Pauline Christianity is the very thing that Paul criticizes and demeans.
And
that's why he went to war with the Torah, is because the Torah is lethal. If you know the Torah, if you're aware of what God said, if the Torah is your perspective, if it provides your guidance, there is a 0% possibility that you can be suckered in by Paul. So that's why Paul chose the Torah as his principal enemy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and if you say, well, I don't kill people and I don't steal things. If you endorse a politician, head of a government, who goes to war, steals their stuff,
yeah.
destroys their people, murders their people, stands back and allows a million Christians, your fellow Christians, by the way, in Iraq to be slaughtered. Well, what are you?
What are you? Yeah, what kind of a hypocrite are you? You know, it's interesting here that it says only the lowly and poor that we might remember. What does Paulos mean in Latin?
Lowly, small, insignificant.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Poor spirit.
Yeah, yeah. The very thing that Yosha warned the disciples about in the Sermon on the Mount, where he said that the one who will speak out against the Torah will be called lowly and little, Paulos, and by those, the messengers in heaven. And here the disciples saying, yeah, the thing you ought to be on the lookout for is the lowly and little. Yes, indeed. And what did Paul say? Yeah, I was quick to do this. Well, I was quick to regard the lowly and little. That would be
absolutely.
Me.
That would be
me.
Even if you say that's a stretch, it's still pretty poignant.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that would be me. And I don't think it's a stretch. I think that's how twisted this man is.
Oh, yeah. You know? Is that a
Yeah, so I guess that God could have dispensed with the Torah. He could have dispensed with the covenant because that was not important. The prophets were a waste of time. Why bother with the pain associated with fulfilling Passover and unyeasted bread? In fact, why did Paul even take the trouble of writing his 13 letters when the only thing that you need to do is be charitable?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, what's the name of the Greek little goddesses?
The Charites.
Oh, the Charites. Yes, indeed. All you need to be is Charis. All you need is a little gratia in your life, and you'll just be fine.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, we will consider a recap of Galatians 2, 8, 9, and 10 when we rejoin. And then move on to Acts 15 as another insight. Paragraphs into Shaul, Paul's opening treatise, his letter to the Galatians, the first letter he would write, a letter that he penned exactly 666 years after Yahweh called him the plague of death through the prophet Chabaouk. And here's his last paragraph, the eighth. Because then, namely, the one having previously functioned in Petro to an apostle for the circumcision, it actually functioned also in me to the nations and ethnicities. And having known and having recognized, becoming familiar with the grace, the gratia, of the one having been given to me, Jacob, Kephish, and also Yaukanan, the ones presently presumed, regarded and supposed to be pillars, and thus leaders, the right place of honor and authority they granted to me, and to Barnabas fellowship as a result. We to the nations and ethnicities, but they to the circumcision. Only alone by itself, the lowly and poor, the worthless beggars of little value, that we might remember and possibly think about, which also I was eager and quick, same this to do. Galatians 2, 8, 9, and 10. I've spent a lot of time, as have you, studying the Torah. I've spent a lot of time, as have you, reading Dode's majestic songs about the Torah. I, like you, have spent a great deal of time listening to Yahweh's testimony through the prophets. And none of this is consistent with what I've seen therein.
No, and the word Zeth, or Zeth, comes to mind where he says the one and only should be focused on is my covenant relationship. You know, when he's talking to Abraham, you know, you should shamar, observe it,
right,
read it constantly, right, study it, and that's not in here.
No, it's
and that leads on to circumcision. That the end of that sentence is and you must circumcise your sons and all the males. So
yeah.
That destroys, if that's true, then that obviously then Yahweh is confused.
Yeah. You know, the Torah, it does a marvelous job of presenting things in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
God creates the universe. God creates life. God creates man in his image. God endows man with some unique characteristics and abilities. God talks about why he wants to get down on his knees to lift man up. And he talks about his relationship with Adam, and this the nature of the Garden of Eden. And then he talks about giving man free will and the option to choose not him, and how an adversary came in and twisted his testimony to lead Chawa and Adam astray. Isn't Paul that same serpent twisting Yahweh's testimony to lead people astray?
Same spirit.
Same spirit.
Same function, the same approach. Muhammad does the same thing. It's all twisted.
It's exactly the same approach. Let's take what Yahweh says, because those who said that, oh, God would never allow anyone to corrupt his testimony. Well, what's the whole story of how Satan slithering into the garden? If he got into the garden, who let him in?
Yeah. Well, yeah. If he, nothing. Let's put it that way. He certainly did nothing.
Did Satan say, you know, who is Yahweh? He's not. He doesn't exist. I have a my own plan, and here's my own plan. Or did he do exactly what Paul did? Claimed that God exists, but took what Yahweh said out of context, truncated it, and then misapplied it.
Well, I think we're just lucky that he's not creative.
Yeah. But didn't Paul do exactly the same thing?
I mean, it's verbatim. It's not even, it's the same old stick.
Right. As a matter of fact, Paul slithered out of the place where Eden was and into the promised land and into Yisrael and offered the same twisted, truncated perversion of Yahweh's testimony, just like Satan did.
Yes, just like Muhammad did.
Just like, well, Muhammad didn't do it in the promised land.
Out of Mecca, didn't
he? Yeah, but and Muhammad, I don't think ever even made an attempt to twist Yahweh's testimony. But nonetheless, he clearly wasn't smart enough. But there are parallels on that both claim that they were inspired and authorized by the God who rendered the made the Torah and prophets and Psalms available to us. When you read this, what you're reading is essentially is I'm going to provide a smokescreen.
Right.
I'm going to provide a distraction. I'm going to take you away from everything that God said was important. I'm going to contradict and condemn everything God said was important. I'm not going to talk to you about the Torah and its guidance. I'm not going to talk to you about the covenant and that relationship. I'm not going to talk to you about the invitations to meet with God and the benefits. I'm not going to talk to you about the prophets who proved that what I'm saying is incorrect. No. We're going to talk about me, the lowly and little one. Thank you, Kirk. We'll be back with you tomorrow. May God bless.